mustard and them rivers can run. Leaks spring up, tailings come undone, and grandfathers watch the young ones die. Well, water catches flame, water catches flame, water catches flame, my oh my. Hey, hey. Save them for our great granddaughter. Save them before all is dead and done. Hey, hey.
For 30 years, there has been one voice in the local Vancouver art scene that has stood above the rest, and that's Discorder, that conspiracy, punk rock, foxcore, sassy, still publishing magazine from CITR. We're one of the established and trusted voices of Vancouver's music and arts culture in the Lower Mainland, with 8,000 copies distributed monthly to over 135 distribution locations, from the Lido to Zulu Records.
Discorder is one of a few magazines published by a community radio station, and we only serve up the freshest local and Canadian goods.
We have interviews with artists, album reviews, live show reviews, and articles about everything important to our crazy, unique, varied, and amazing culture in Vancouver and across the country.
Pick up your free copy of Discorder today, or sign up to have it delivered to your door wherever you are.
Check out our website for distribution locations and all the information about advertising and getting involved with Discorder.
Hey, CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. You're listening to from unceded Musqueam territory. That's where we're broadcasting on the University of British Columbia campus. This is Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul, and I'm playing an interview I did a few weeks ago, Listen to Succeed. It's all about listening skills and how to succeed through using listening skills. So have a great day. Have a great week. Love you so much. Namaste.
When you join Balloon Club, we guarantee that you will be able to make a balloon poodle within the first day.
Here at the UBC Ant Club, we just like to talk about ants and compare ant farms. It's really cool.
Paperclip Club is all about, well, paperclips mostly.
At Blah Club, you can blah blah, blah 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 blah.
Explosion!
There's only one club worth joining at UBC, and that's CITR 101.9 FM. We got free tickets to shows, whirly pops, professional help in all types of audio engineering, passes to festivals, crazy parties, live band swag. All types of crazy people. Our programming manager rides a motorcycle. There's freestyle rapping, Nardwar the Human Serviette, the vinyl and record libraries, Discorder magazine, free studio recording, and it sure beats the hell out of Paperclip Club, which is a thing that I just made up because I work at
CITR.
So come check us out on the floor of the Student Union Building. We got all types of crazy shit for you to do. Or check us out online at www.citr.ca.
Oh, and welcome to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. Thank you so much for being with us today. You may be watching this on youtube.com/spiritualshow or listening on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, where we broadcast from unceded Musqueam territory on the University of British Columbia campus, or you might be listening online at citr.ca, cosmicdimensions.com, empowerradio.com, or on the Co-Creator Network. And wherever you're joining us from, I hope you're having a fabulous day. So today's guest is Leslie Shore. She is the author of Listen to Succeed, How to Identify and Overcome Barriers of Effective
listening. And Leslie Shore is the owner of Listen to Succeed, which is a consultancy that focuses on listening analytics to help its personal and professional clients achieve their highest level of effective communication. And her book, Listen to Succeed, How to Identify and Overcome Barriers and Effective Listening, and its companion listening analytics tool, Listening Effectiveness Profile, is used in universities, businesses, and nonprofits throughout the United States and Canada. And this book is actually a textbook at four different universities. So we definitely have a knowledgeable person on the line today. So welcome to the show, Leslie.
Thank you so much, Maureen. It's wonderful being here.
Thank you for being with us. So what would you say is the most important place to start when we're talking about the importance of effective listening?
Well, I think we have to realize that communication is all about creating relationship. And when we're talking about relationship, we need to think about not just the speaking aspect of it, but the receiving from others. And that's the listening aspect. And the reality is that we listen 45% of the time, and yet we're never taught how to listen. It's assumed that because we can hear, which is physiology, we know how to listen, but listening is actually processing, and it's processing through our brain, through our history, through our experiences, through our knowledge, through our wisdom. And they're two completely different things. And it is a skill that we can improve upon.
So Leslie, I'm curious now about in your book, Listen to Succeed, you talk about the different types of listening, the different ways that we can listen. But there's also the difference between active listening and passive listening. So can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, sure. So there's active listening, which has been a buzzword for quite a long time. And it's leaning forward, letting everyone know that you are... you're paying attention to them, you're rephrasing, you're doing a number of things to let the person know that you are listening to them. The problem is that active listening is a situation where you can active listen all you want, but unless you know what the barriers are in the way of your listening to that person, it's not going to make a difference. There are power and control barriers, there are emotional barriers, all those types of things that really can get in the way of your effectively listening to someone.
So you actually have a master's degree in human development, Leslie. So I'm curious how listening and human development are interconnected. Like, how did you discover the importance of this in the first place?
So, two things. One, I was doing my master's work and I was extremely lucky. I grew up in a family of origin that started with my grandmother and also my mom and dad, who were incredibly effective listeners. And because they were, my brothers and I grew up in an environment that our self-esteem was really never in doubt because we were truly listened to. So when I started my master's work, I knew that that's what I really wanted to work with, to talk about listening, to make its importance understood, and to make sure that people knew what barriers were in the way. I basically wanted everyone to have the opportunity that I had in terms of how I grew up in a listening environment.
Awesome. I apologize. I'm kind of normally the hangout switches images as soon as someone makes a noise, but something I did clicked on earlier messed it all up. So that's one barrier to listening because I'm having to multitask. How does multitasking affect listening?
Great segue, Marie. That's perfect because I do talk about it in my book. And when we talk about multitasking. It's a misnomer that you can multitask and do both tasks well. When you have two cognitive tasks that you're doing, let's say typing and talking on the phone, you really can't give your 100% attention to either. So they both suffer. Your productivity suffers, your product suffers. And the same is true when you're trying to listen to someone and do something else. Listening really takes total concentration. So if you're multitasking, you're truly not listening at your highest capability.
Now, Leslie, it's interesting because I feel like I multitask often, and I think that it's not even 50-50. Like if I'm trying to talk on the phone and read an article online, you would think that, okay, so maybe each task is getting half of your attention. But really, I don't even think that's the case. I think they both suffer, like maybe each task is getting 10%.
I would agree with that completely, because if you think about, if you look at your brain as a bunch of wires, just imagine how many times those wires get crossed and shorted out, because what you're doing in that multitasking situation is you're overloading those wires, and they're shorting out because they're trying to be in the same space at the same time. It just really doesn't work well at all.
Another thing, maybe I won't focus so much on trying to move our images back and forth, because that is diminishing my ability to effectively listen to you right now. But one thing, I read an article in the past couple weeks about being more charismatic, and it said something along the lines of just the presence of a cell phone in the vicinity, even if the ringer is off, actually diminishes your level of charisma and the feeling that the person on the other end has of how much attention you're giving them.
It's a question of, I feel it's a question of energy. And if your thought process or your attention is diverted for 5% looking at that cell phone, wondering what's coming in or what might be going on, that energy is now being siphoned off elsewhere. And I love the word charisma, because I think people who are charismatic are the type of people who actually are looking eye to eye, heart to heart, soul to soul. And that takes 100% of your energy, of who you are. And people who are truly charismatic are those people who can listen to you and have their ego pushed completely aside, so you know you are being listened to and they have no agenda that they're following. You feel totally listened to.
So how different, I mean, for you, how wonderful that you were able to grow up in a home where you felt listened to and valued. I think that more often than not, people are just constantly self-conscious. They're worried about what other people are going to think of them. So they're automatically, half of their attention is internal and not paying attention to that other person. What have you noticed with working with people and that aspect of listening or self-esteem?
Well, there are a couple of things. You can look at it from two points of view. There are a number of people, in terms of their listening capability, that when they take my learning assessment profile, find out that one of their issues is performance anxiety. And that performance anxiety literally has them figuring out what they're going to say in response to someone before that person even finishes talking. So in trying to make sure their self-esteem is intact by wanting to be intelligent in their response, they end up not listening to the end, and the opposite can occur. And that can be an interesting and difficult thing to understand about oneself, but it also happens to be one of the easiest things skill-wise that can be improved upon. And I think when we talk about self-esteem and listening, we in America, and I say we in America because you're in British Columbia, in America we have this thing about the speaker having the power. And in reality, it is the listener that has the power. When you listen, you learn. When you speak, you don't. And Winston Churchill said, it takes courage to stand up and speak, but it also takes courage to sit down and listen. And self-esteem comes literally from knowing that you're being listened to. So imagine what you can give to another person by listening to them in a way that they know they're being listened to. It shoots their self-esteem up and it brings their blood pressure down.
Hmm. So that's going to make the person who is the listener is really more, like you said, in the position of power, because not only are they having so much influence on how the speaker feels based on how they're listening, but also this person, I mean, I notice in interviews and when I speak with people, and I think there's a lot of room for growth in my listening skills, but sometimes just allowing someone to speak without interrupting them, they just spill out all their secrets and they're like, wow, I've never told anyone this before. I can't believe I'm telling you this. So just shutting up and being present can really give you so much more benefit.
And the only reason I'm chuckling is I was speaking to someone yesterday and they had just gotten off a plane, and they were having a conversation, in quotes, with the person next to them. And that person next to them just spoke for the whole two-hour trip. And my friend who was listening to this really listened well and effectively and sincerely. And before they got off the plane, the gal who was doing the talking said, that was the best conversation I ever had. She really felt listened to. And that's really a powerful place to be and to be present. And you really kicked one of the first keys, one of the first components of effective listening, and that's being present. Pushing your own ego aside and allowing yourself to be the receptacle for, as you said, people will, they will tell you everything if they know they're being sincerely listened to.
So it's interesting, though. I mean, I could see how that could be used to manipulate people as well, because I know a lot of people that are very charismatic and perhaps a little bit sociopathic and charismatic, use that listening, use that making a person feel seen as a way to break their walls down. I don't know how much you work with that concept, but
I normally do not work with that concept, but here's the thing I would say about that. Body language is a huge key to effectively listening. And for sociopathic folks, their body language and what they say are in dissonance. And if you can look at the body language at the same time that you are listening to what this person is saying, and you can sense the dissonance, then you really do know that the body language is telling the truth. And the words are the thing that you should not be paying any attention to at all. The study of body language has totally proven that when you have the body language saying one thing and the words saying another thing, always believe the body language because the body does not lie.
Oh, well, that is a very helpful tip. Thank you so much. So I want to ask you, I'm a little bit nervous to know your response, but just for the for the sake of the interview, I don't know, I mean, you can't see my whole body, but I know that as you're speaking, I'm nodding in agreement. And is that effective listening, or is that just distraction and rude?
No, that is really effective listening. So now you can relax. It's really effective listening because one of the other components of effective listening is listen in a way that the speaker knows that you're listening, that you're acknowledging what it is that they're saying. And sometimes it's a nod, sometimes it's leaning forward, sometimes it's smiling, sometimes it's a, interesting point. And what you're doing is that you are, in a sense, honoring the speaker in a way that you're acknowledging that you are interested in what they're saying. It's really an important part, and body language, again, also tells the truth. If you're saying, that's really interesting, and you're kind of laid back and your eyes are rolling, they're going to go with the body language. They'll know what the truth is. But if you are truly interested and you want to acknowledge the speaker in a way that has them continue, that is really a wonderful, wonderful way to effectively listen.
And I just thought of something, and I realized, what happened to my pen? Must have rolled off the table here. I noticed that sometimes, especially when I'm in an interview, you know, there's obviously going to be some performance anxiety there. I'm running it all by myself without a producer. So there's the multitasking, there's the performance anxiety. And I know that it does help to write down a note of my thoughts so that I can come back to the present moment instead of trying to remember it.
Yes.
But now I forgot.
I know where you were going with it.
But then isn't it, how rude is it to write down a note when someone's watching versus just holding it in your mind?
It not only is it not rude, but it is absolutely essential. And one of the things that I talk to people about is the other part of performance anxiety, and that is you don't want to forget what you wanted to say to the person because the person brought up this great point. And sometimes people interrupt because they don't want to forget. And so what I do is I have this little spiral notebook that I always have, and my friends know this about me. So if we're having a conversation, what I do is I just write down a couple of words, not about what I want to say in response, but what it is that they've said that I want to respond to, just a couple of words. Because my grandmother said, listen without judgment and wait for the period at the end of the sentence before even formulating a reply. And this is one of the tricks that can help you do that. If you're having a great conversation with someone and they say something really wonderful about something that you're both passionate about, you write down those couple of words that they said and get back to the conversation. Then when it's obviously your turn to talk, then you can say, hey, Susie, you said, and you tell them what you heard, and then you add your response. Not only is that not rude in terms of handling it that way, but again, it honors the speaker that you wrote down something that you really wanted to discuss with them and you didn't interrupt them, but they really feel heard as a result.
Mm. Awesome. I love that. Okay. So we haven't brought up your book for a little while. So right now we are speaking with Leslie Shore. She is the author of Listen to Succeed, How to Identify and Overcome Barriers to Effective Listening. And there are like a whole whack of barriers. There are, I think it was 8 main barriers and then 37 mini smaller barriers. Right. And then let's talk about, first of all, if you want to get more information about Leslie and her book, you can go to www.listentosucceed.com. And I would imagine this is about succeeding in all aspects of life, not just business, but in interpersonal, any kind of interpersonal interaction.
Yeah, this book was written for essentially everybody. It's succeeding in life, in every part of life. This is great for doctors. It's great for parents. It's great for teachers. It's great for managers. It's great for little league coaches. Literally, anybody that reads this book, and if they decide to take the listening effectiveness profile that's on the website, then they'll find out really which of the major barriers are getting in their way, and they can work on those. But this is a book that can be used by anyone, and it's immensely practical. You will find out what the barrier is, how it shows up for you, and what you can do to push it aside. Because you can't ever get rid of them completely. You are the listener you are because of how you grew up. And that's fine. No problem with that. But as soon as you're aware of where your barriers, your major barriers are, you really can be a choice to push them aside in the moment when you're having a conversation.
So, Leslie, oh, there's so many things that are coming up. This is such an amazing topic. There, I mean, you could probably talk about this for hours and hours. Okay, so I'm just writing down notes of what I want to cover so that I can pay attention. But one of the things is, I think, that people struggle with, you mentioned listening without judgment, letting the person finish speaking before you even start to decide what you want to say, which means there's going to be silence.
Yes.
People don't like that. They get nervous.
What's interesting, again, is that it really depends on the culture. There are some cultures that actually don't mind the silence at all, because that silence is telling them that the person is really thinking about what they just said. Again, an honoring of the speaker. I think European and European derivatives such as Canadians and Americans, we have an issue with silence because we have this thing about the speaker really has the power, so we do anything to get it back. But silence is something that really says, I'm thinking deeply about what you just said. And one of the things that I do, and my friends all laugh at me, but they know what's going on. When they have said something and they know I'm thinking because I cast my eyes downward and I put my finger up. So it's kind of saying, I'm thinking about what you just said. And they'll keep silence. And then I will give my response. But it's a well thought out response, and it's a critical thinking response, and it's one where they really feel heard because I am giving them a response that makes sense in light of what they had just said.
This is also, that made me think of, there's a dating and relationship expert, Alison Armstrong, and she, I don't know if you've heard of her, but she specializes in communication between men and women. Mm-hmm. And with men, especially because women are very much more naturally verbal, I think, on the surface. So we have answers, we know how we feel immediately, but a man speaking in major generalizations needs often to take more time to really, Alison Armstrong calls it the well, to go down into that well and really contemplate what his opinion is on that. And so when men are and women are speaking, men so rarely get to actually share what they're thinking and feeling, because as soon as there's a moment of silence, the woman is like, blah, 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 and we actually never get the amazing benefit of knowing what's really going on with this guy.
It's so interesting that you say that, because people ask me, is there a difference between the listening effectiveness of men and women? And the answer is yes, depending on whether it's a woman-to-woman conversation, a man-to-man conversation, or a man-to-woman conversation. You're absolutely right that there are many different dynamics that play depending on the type of conversation. And you are so right that when we don't give the other person a chance to dig deep into that well, to come up with a response that is a measured and thoughtful response, we're really cutting off our own nose to spite our face. And this is where a lot of communication conflict happens. And unfortunately, men, when they're in a business situation, almost feel pressured to make sure that there is no silence. And it can be very, very difficult to enforce a silence so that they can actually come up with what they really want to say.
So it sounds like they're really missing all of the best insight. They're just, when you don't allow for a silence, you're just getting that very surface layer of communication. You never get any deeper.
Right. One of the things that my parents used to do, they had two signals. And one was timeout, you know, the usual timeout signal, which was when they were kind of in conflict and they knew they had to step away and gain perspective. That was one. And then there was one that was like this. It was a different. Now, it means something different in football. But when they did that, it meant, and especially it was dad who would use that with mom, because my mom, they were both very, very intelligent people. But it took dad longer to come up with a measured, intelligent, thoughtful response, just to your point that you were talking about. So when mom would say something, he'd automatically go like this, and mom knew, just stick with the silence and let dad come up with whatever his response was. And to be honest with you, as we grew up as children, there was very little argument or discord in the house, because my folks had figured out that this was an essential part of good communication between the two of them.
So if you're listening on the radio and you can't see the hand signals, so Leslie, for the timeout was the standard T with your hands, and then the time to think was sort of a sideways timeout.
Correct.
Instead of, yeah. But, I mean, you could make up your own signals. And I don't think, because I've interviewed Dr. Stan Takin on the show a few times, and it's not just the difference between men and women. It's the difference between processing speed and all of that. In our, I mean, everyone is wired slightly differently depending on so many factors.
It's very true. And I think one of the most important things when we talk about being present is understanding with whom you're speaking. Who are you listening to? What are their person? What is their personality? What is their style? What drives them? I had a friend who was from the South, and she would speak so slowly that what I had to do was literally lower my thinking pace so that my mind wouldn't wander in between her words. And on the opposite end, I remember being delightfully surprised when I went to see Kate Hepburn live on stage with her Connecticut accent. This was years ago. She was speaking so quickly and with such an accent, it literally took me 10 minutes of concentrated listening to catch her cadence and her accent so I could really listen to what she was saying. It really is a case-by-case basis, and it's a muscle that you absolutely can stretch and beef up by paying attention to the individual with whom you're having the conversation.
Awesome. Well, again, we are speaking with Leslie Shore. She is the author of Listen to Succeed. If you want more information, you can go to listentosucceed.com. And I actually didn't check out your website. I will have to. So you have this listening effectiveness profile. You have a like a quiz, I'm assuming. Can you tell us a little bit more about how that works?
Sure. Actually, it is 96 statements, and it will take the person who is taking it about 20 minutes of uninterrupted time, and that's very important, to go through those statements and to check off what their reaction is to it. Literally, when they hit submit, after they've taken it, they will get an immediate response with a paragraph about the major barriers. The minor barriers that are within are what's really in the book, but the response that they get is very detailed in terms of their barriers. It really pinpoints the taker's barriers, and although my book is available on Amazon.com, the Listening Effectiveness Profile is only available on my website, and it's instantaneous.
And again, that's listentosucceed.com. And if you're watching on YouTube, I'll post a link to that in the description. Oh, they can't see me. I'll post a link to that in the description below this video. But again, it's listentosucceed.com. I'm curious. I used to volunteer at a suicide prevention hotline. And in your book, you do mention how listening for emotion can actually prevent you from hearing other things. If you're just very focused on what the one thing that you're listening for. And I noticed that was really a challenge for me, because I would be very good at listening for the emotion and then reflecting mm-hmm. back what I'm hearing. But all of the details, I would have to just jot down a key word, because I was so focused on the emotion, there was no way that my mind could hold on to the other information. Is that common?
It's really quite common. And for those in the helping professions, it's a tight wire. It's a tightrope of being able to listen for the facts and the emotion at the same time. And having that little spiral notebook that you can literally jot down a word or two to help you with the facts and or the emotions will allow you to stay present to both, because you're not trying to keep both of them in your head. Now, what's really interesting about the helping professions, I remember once that I was working with a group of counselors at a domestic violence shelter, and they took the assessment, and one gal said, "I really don't like my results, but they're right." And it was just amazing. Everyone laughed around the table, but what it really spoke to was exactly this issue, that she had a tendency to listen for one or the other, facts or emotion, but she too was having an issue of being able to do both simultaneously. And so there were some tips and tricks that I was able to give them all to help them to be able to do that.
So, yeah, I mean, it almost feels like even though you're doing the one task of listening, it seems like listening, I mean, you're looking at body language, you're listening for emotion, tone of voice, speed, all of that, and the facts. That in itself seems like multitasking.
It's so interesting that you say that, because what the reality is that... this takes a lot of energy, and I don't think people realize how much energy effective listening takes, especially when you're beginning to work your muscles and get more effective in certain areas. I liken it to some sports analogies, and that is when you have a batter standing in the batter's box. There are literally a lot of moving parts going on there for the batter to think about. Where's the weight of his back foot or her back foot? Where are the wrists? Are they cocked correctly? I'm watching the ball come in. Do I see a spin? So there's a lot of things happening just to get to the point of hitting the ball. And yet we don't think of it as all these moving parts. It's just someone batting and either popping out or getting a home run or somewhere in between. The same thing happens with listening. We can pop up or we can hit a home run. It's just a question of how effective are we being in all the different pieces. Yes, it's multitasking, but it's all towards one thing, and that is being present so that the speaker feels totally heard.
Leslie, that I'm curious, and I'm sure with all the work that you've done, and there must be a lot of research on this subject. You were talking about the baseball. I imagine that the more practice a person gets, some of those things, just like driving a car, would become automatic, and then you can more effectively multitask in that way. How does that work when it comes to the skill of learning to listen?
It's absolutely true, Marie. And the reality is the more we practice, the better we become. And part of the practicing is knowing what your particular barriers are. And you, when they come up for you, you get practice on pushing them aside. I'll give you a very quick example. In fourth grade, another fourth grader said that I was ugly. And I took that to heart. I never said anything to my parents. I just took it in with no filter at all. And for years, when people would say, oh, that person is ugly, I would go off in this rant in my head for about 15 seconds. Don't they realize ugly's on the inside, not the outside? Use the word plain or homely or something of that nature. And of course, while I'm going through that rant, I'm not listening. When I realized what was happening, I learned that when that first came up, I could literally, through practice, push it aside and say, I'll get to that later. And so the same is true of any of the barriers, that the moment you know that it's a barrier of yours, when it comes up, you can be at choice as to whether or not you want to push it aside or not. And it does take strength, and it takes courage, and it takes practice to be able to get it down to a nanosecond, but it is entirely possible.
Awesome. Leslie, I'm actually curious. I imagine the questions on the listening effectiveness profile questionnaire are self-evaluating. But yes, with all the experience that you have in teaching effective listening, how often do you think that you're able to spot people's barriers that they might not even be aware of?
Considering I've now been doing this for about 15 years, I'm pretty successful at spotting the listening barriers of people pretty quickly, because I can sense through their body language when I'm speaking as to what's going on for them. I can sense when they're interrupting as to why they're interrupting. Are they interrupting because they've got anxiety, or are they interrupting because they need to get the floor back? And that's a power and control barrier. After a while, when you start to become an effective listener, you can see in others what's going on with them. And what's really fun about that is that you are able to see it, and you are able to adjust what you're saying or doing in a particular way, either to get them back to effective listening or to kind of lower the tension in the room, so to speak, and maybe give them a boost of self-esteem, because that seems to be what's needed. You get pretty good after it. Get pretty good with it after a while, because you see it in yourself, and through reading the book, you can see all the barriers, and you can see it in others.
Yes, and speaking of the book, we are speaking with Leslie Shore, and this is her book, Listen to Succeed, How to Identify and Overcome Barriers to Effective Listening. Now, you've been doing this, like you said, for about 15 years, and you're a consultant. So what do you do with people who call you up and need your help?
Well, there are a couple of ways that I do that, and a perfect example is that I just did a three-hour session with the Minnesota Department of Revenue because they knew as a group that they wanted to have a higher, more effective level of listening with their clients and the people that they come up against daily, and they knew that there was something going on. And so we work very, very specifically with customer or client insecurity with what's going on and their need to be in control. And the person that's behind the counter, how do they deal with that in terms of their listening so that the person really feels heard? And with other clients, it really depends on the situation at hand. I've dealt with people who are salespeople, and salespeople obviously have an agenda, and their agenda is to sell. The reality is that what I work with them on is, how do you listen? How do you ask questions so that the answers that you get are really worth listening to, instead of how do you speak? How do you get the value of the product or service across? That only goes so far. If the customer can't see how it applies to them, you won't get the sale. And the only way you will know how to do that, how to respond to a client, is to really listen to what they are saying. And just like being present, take the agenda and push it aside. Take the ego and push it aside. And make sure that the customer or client across from you feels totally heard. So those are a couple examples.
Awesome. And I can imagine that it is, at least in our society, I don't know about other cultures, but being listened to effectively is so rare that the better you get at this, the more people are going to value being around you.
Yes. And there are two things about that. One is, especially in business, that if you are the person that people come to because you are such an effective listener, because people do love to be listened to effectively, especially and sincerely, and they can feel that, in a business environment, you will sense the trends. You will sense things going wrong or discomfort with line staff or the area that you're in. And you are able at that point to be able to go to someone further up the hierarchy and say, you know, I've had a number of people come to me and talk about X. Well, when it's time for promotion and there are two people that are pretty much equal in what they've who they are and their skills and that type of thing, the fact that your skill in listening is so good that you've been able to go to higher management with these the synthesis and analysis of what you've heard, you'll be the one who gets the promotion. It's a wonderful thing to be known as the person that listens, because people just come to you like a moth to a flame.
Awesome. Well, Leslie, we just have a few minutes left in the show. We are speaking with Leslie B. Shore. She is the author of Listen to Succeed, How to Identify and Overcome Barriers to Effective Listening. And if you want to find out what some of your barriers are and get that listening effectiveness profile, you can go to her website, listentosucceed.com. You can also order the book from there, I'm assuming, or yes, you can go to amazon.com or anywhere that books are sold. And one of the things I didn't mention it yet. We started talking about it before the interview, but I really like how it's not filled with a lot of extra words. It's very easy. It's just the straight up facts. It's practical. It's user friendly. Yeah, because sometimes you see these books and they're this thick and it's like you really could have summed that up in 50 pages. So I appreciate that it's enough. I mean, you have pictures and diagrams and all of that. So it's enough to get the full understanding, but there aren't a lot of extra words. And actually, I imagine that part of the ability to do that comes from your ability to effectively listen.
Well, I think what's interesting is, and I'm chuckling only because one of the things that people have said to me is that the book is tremendously accessible, that the fact that I am not using what we call 50-cent words, the ones that you have to go to the dictionary to look up, to me that it just seems so silly. I want this information and I want this skill to be in the hands of everyone. I don't care if it's a 16-year-old who wants to do peer coaching in high school, or it's an 80-year-old who wants to have a wonderful relationship with the grandchildren, and it's just having some issues getting there. And I want it to be for everyone in every profession. And that's why I made it so accessible. And the thing is, when you strip things down to their core, which is what I've done here, I think the accessibility is there. I think the readability is there. And to your point, I think it's effective in terms of what it does. And just a side note is that my mom, who was an English teacher, and actually edited a doctoral thesis, was my editor. She and I became editor and author. We took off one hat of mother and daughter and put on editor and author, and boy, that was a listening clinic in and of itself.
I can imagine. I'm just wondering, with just a few minutes left in the show, Leslie, where do you think it's important to take this conversation?
I think it's important to take this conversation. I would love for medical schools to have a course on listening. I would love for every college in their communications courses, not to you just use the 10% of the textbook on communication that speaks to listening, but to really explode it to where it deserves. We have a situation in the world where because we're not listened to effectively, it really causes conflict. And one of the things that I think is important to say, and I want to make sure that I get this correctly, is that we, when we are listened to, open up, we feel heard, our self-esteem rises. It literally changes our day. It changes our self-esteem. And I think if we look at it from the point of view that it is a core need and a core skill that can be improved upon and make every relationship you have better, I think that's where this needs to go. I am hoping to get this translated into different languages and to get it into the hands of people, especially in the helping professions and parents especially also, so that their children can grow up with the self-esteem that comes from being effectively listened to, which in a child's eyes is being valued, and it gives dignity.
Hmm. So it sounds, I mean, it would be great to have it in medical school and all of these different helping professions, but it almost sounds like this should be it from kindergarten. onward. So it should just be part of the curriculum.
It's a great point. I think you're right. I know that in terms of the assessment itself, that you really have to be around anywhere between 14 and 16 for you to be able to answer those questions in a self-informed way. But the reality is that any parent, grandparent, or teacher that truly listens to a child, starting at the age of about 3, when a child is cognitively able to really sense whether they're being listened to or not, if people can really take the time, take the energy, and take the focus and make sure that child knows that they are being listened to, oh my goodness, you won't have a teenager looking at you and say, Mom, why aren't you listening to me? That's the common complaint. If we start at age 3, that will never come up.
Wow. I actually know I'm probably partly this way as well. People who tend to talk a lot and interrupt and all of that, I notice that if you look at their childhood, they weren't heard. So they just keep talking and talking and talking. And it's like, oh my God, because they just, I don't know what specifically it is, because ironically, the more we talk, especially if we talk in circles and don't get to the point, people tend to tune us out. Right. And yet the people who were heard the least as children, in my observation, tend to be more that way. So it's like continuing to not be heard ever.
Correct, because the pendulum has now swung to the opposite end too far and is not ever coming down to, you know, to balance. And the wonderful thing, though, Marie, is that that person, if they find one friend who listens to them constantly and effectively, that one friend can make a huge difference in the communication of that person, because in feeling sincerely listened to, they actually will slow down, they'll actually have a period at the end of the sentence, and they actually will feel so honored and their self-esteem will be good that they can actually handle a response instead of having to be in the position of being the speaker all the time.
Hmm. Wonderful. Well, we are just about out of time, and it's been such a pleasure speaking with you, Leslie. Again, Leslie Shore, Listen to Succeed is the book. ListenToSucceed.com is the website where you can find out what's wrong with the way that you listen, and hopefully find some other ways, other strategies to improve upon that. So I'm wondering, Leslie, before we wrap up, is there anything else that you'd like to say before we say goodbye?
Yes, and it is that you are the listener that you are because of the way you grew up, your family of origin, your first jobs. That is who you are right now. But as any other skill, you can become more effective and you can become better at it. And the reality is that even though one of the first keys is being non-judgmental and the other key is being present, that is a muscle that you can pump that muscle and it can become better and better and better. Everything can change for you and this person that you are listening to. It does work. You can become a more effective listener.
Awesome. Well, it is time to say goodbye. Leslie, please don't go anywhere. I want to ask you some things after, but I get to ask whatever I want and you don't get to hear. But no, I want to connect you hopefully with some people, because I feel like this is such an important skill and we do need more. What a better world it would be if people could listen to each other. Oh my gosh. Politicians. That'd be great. Okay. So thank you so much for your time, Leslie. This has been Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. Thank you so much for joining us today. I hope that you found this helpful. Again, you can